Hello, my name's Kate Rowles and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust, so you're taking part in Antigormley's One and Other. The date today is the 25th of July 2009, and if I can please ask you to state your name, your date of birth and where you come from.
So my name is Karen Doolan and I was born on May 24th, 1978 and I come from Cambridge.
Lovely. And you're here today to, you've got the midnight slot, standing on the plinth. What was it, if I can just take you back to when you first heard about the project, what was it that made you apply initially?
So I was looking at the online timeout to see about what was happening. I was thinking of coming up London for the weekend, and I sort of, there was this flashy bit of timeout that said Gormley, and I went to Gormley's exhibition at the Hayward a couple of years ago, and I loved his work, and so I thought, oh, you know, maybe there's another exhibition. So I clicked on it and the project came up and I read about it and I thought it sounded great. I've been following what's been happening with the plinth over the years, and I just thought this was a really interesting way of using the plinth. And I thought, well, I'd just love to be part of that. It was sort of a mixture of initial attraction by the name Anthony Gormley, and then sort of from that, I thought it was a very creative way of using the plinth, and I wanted to be part of that.
And when you found out that you were going to be part of that, how did you decide what to do or what not to do, how to spend your hour?
Yeah, so you know, when I saw about the project, I just thought, oh, this is really exciting, and I filled in the form, and then I thought, well, what are the chances of getting selected? But you know, I sort of started thinking about, oh, but what can I actually do on the plinth? And I thought, there's bound to be people who are going to be wonderful musicians, or, you know, who are going to have all sorts of fantastic ideas about what to do, and I was thinking, what could my contribution be? I'm in academia, which is for most people a very boring part of existence, and I thought, so can't paint, can't sing, but that's interesting, because I guess my first associations, even though I thought, oh, what a creative way of using the plinth, my first associations of what to do on the plinth were connected to, you know, my traditional understanding of art, I guess, and what people might be interested in seeing. So I sort of tried to go beyond that and think of sort of, yeah, about some, yeah, to do something else. So does that answer the question?
I know it's a difficult journey to make the decision of what to do. It's quite a hard decision. What did you decide on in the end? What was it that you thought, yes, that's what I'll do?
Initially my idea was to print out this very long scroll, which would be the first chapter of my PhD, and I would read it. And the point of it would be to, it would sort of be a criticism of academia that's not sufficiently communicative with the public. And so this long scroll, which would go from the top of the plinth to the bottom, sort of touching Trafalgar Square, would be symbolic of this need for this communication. But then I thought that might be actually perpetuating the thing, because number one, what if people can't hear me? Number two, I'm reading something I wrote, which is written and not spoken language. And I thought, I thought that would not be a good idea, because I think I would be redoing what I was criticizing. So decided not to do that. So I decided to do something which is very simple, but I'm going to act out the thinking outside the box phrase. And I'm going to sit on the plinth with a box that says box on it, in my t-shirt that says outside and thinking. and I'm going to ponder for an hour. But what's interesting with the box story is that I've just carried the box through the underground. And my journey onto the plinth actually has started several hours ago, because people have been reacting to the box, you know, and saying, because it says box all around it, people have been saying things like, oh, she's carrying a box. Or someone walked up to me and said, are you carrying a box? And so actually, the work became alive even before I sort of even, you know, before I'm going to get onto the plinth. It's already taken on, and it's been interesting to see people's reactions to it. So, yeah, I was thinking how, you know, I think we're all in some sorts of boxes, whether professional or social or private, and you know, people know what their boxes are. And so the idea is to think about what our boxes are and try to think creatively beyond them. Yeah, so that's it. Very static.
Brilliant. Is thinking outside the box something you try to do in your everyday life? Is that a phrase that is significant for you?
Yes, it is. Although I think it's also a source of frustration, because I don't think it's easy to think outside the box. So it's a thing that I try to do. It's something that I'm aware of. So I think it is an important part of me. You know, thinking about what are these different boxes I'm in, and what do I do that's, you know, outside them, or how do I try to be outside them? Mm-hmm. But sometimes I don't think there's a need necessarily to be outside, you know, certain social boxes, you know, but I think it's about, you know, exercising more free will, and not just going through life being, you know, drawn through life by different social norms or by different professional expectations. And, well, that's what it is for me, at least. So, yeah, it's kind of trying to be more of a free-willed individual. And so, yeah, it's important for me not to sort of go through life through a pattern that's expected, but it's also difficult, I think. So I guess it's originality. It's trying to do that, but also often feeling, and sometimes it's good and other times it's not. So I think it's a difficult phrase as well.
Yeah. What boxes do you think you're feeling inside the most at the moment?
I think one thing that's always been sort of expected from me is a particular educational route and then professional route. And I think I've sort of always felt that it's expected of me to go to this school, and then after that go to this, do this degree, and then... And I've always sort of felt as if I have very little control over that. But I sort of went according to it. And now I'm finishing my PhD, and I'm sort of looking back and thinking, I've just followed the whole, you know, where was my moment of resistance in this whole route, which I think was almost sort of laid out. And because I'm finishing my PhD now, I think I feel that quite strongly. But I do think that, you know, that's somewhere where I do feel that it is a box, but I do think that my work is on social inequalities in higher education, and that's something I feel very strongly about. So it's about activism as well. It's not just you know. So I guess it's a good thing as well. Yeah.
Can I ask you to elaborate a little bit on your work?
Okay. So actually, my research was set in Croatia. I followed a group of first year students through their first year of study, and looking at how they experienced their first year. The important part of this being that they came from different social backgrounds. And this is a better researched area in Western Europe and in America, but it's not that well researched in Southeastern Europe. and they don't really have measures to deal with social inequalities. So often the people who do get to higher education are from families which are better educated or sort of better financially off. And those who do make it to the, into the system struggle through their first year. So I was looking at how their student experiences are shaped by their social position and gender, to put it brief.
was your PhD sort of, are you doing it through a British university? Is it funded by a British university or by Southeastern Europe, by Croatia? Where's the kind of drive coming from?
Well, actually, I get funded by both. So I get funded by, I've been funded by my university here, and I've also been funded partially by the Croatian Ministry of Science and Education. So it's been a joint, and the Open Society Institute as well. So my scholarship has sort of come from different sources. It's like a joint venture.
And do you think that things are changing in the subject area that you're exploring? Do you think that social inequalities are beginning to become less of an issue as time goes on, or not?
I think they sort of. You know, when I look at the world around me, I mean, what I see is this social reproduction. I see just people living out, you know, default biographies more than transformative biographies. And I think it varies from one part of the world to the other. But I think that, you know, in general, what we can see is that people who come from poorer backgrounds tend to remain poor, and people who come from rich backgrounds tend to remain rich. And, you know, this is something that sociology has been working with for so many years. But, I think that they sort of, it's like they always, it always escapes us how it actually happens. So, you know, there are different sociological theories trying to explain it. But I think things maybe do get changed, but then they become problematic on a different level. So, for example, yes, maybe you get more first-generation students into higher education now than you used to before. So students whose parents hadn't gone to university themselves. But then you have a problem of where they go to university. So there is a distinction in the university field between, you know, the top and then within the top university, which course you choose. And so I think, you know, there are definitely steps forward, but I think that it's always an issue. I think it always needs working on, and investing time and funds and into trying to find ways in which people who are less privileged can be supported. I think that's really important. And I think that we live in a world which has this very individualistic approach, you know, that, you know, if you're hardworking or if you're bright, you know, you can make it. But I see the world differently. I see it as, you know, a battle against different structures that are there working against you. And it's not that easy. It's not just about being intelligent or, you know, hardworking. It's much more structural, you know. So, yeah.
Is there anything in your background that you think has motivated you to do this particular PhD, to have this title and to take this route?
I think that, I don't come from an underprivileged background, and sometimes I feel awkward doing research. Sometimes I feel as if, you know, I'm a privileged voice trying to research underprivileged, and I worry about how whether I'm sufficiently sensitive to these perspectives, and I try and I build that into sort of building this reflexivity, you know, of I don't want to impose. I mean, there's always some imposition, but, you know, I don't want to impose how I see, you know, I mean, you know, on people who come from very different backgrounds. So I try to do, my research is mostly exploratory, so it's more about asking people to talk about themselves. So my biography wasn't sort of me coming from an underprivileged background, but it was someone who noticed inequalities from when I was much younger, and I saw them to do with money, but I also saw them how they worked with people who had disabilities or didn't, and with women, and you know, these, now I'm talking about these stereotypical at-risk groups, but I noticed that, and I always experienced it, you know, emotionally and strongly. And so I think that actually I think I became aware that I am in the position where actually I could do something, you know, to help. So that's that.
And could you tell us a little bit about your own background? A little bit more detail.
My background, okay. So my mum's Croatian, my father's English, so I was brought up in a multicultural sort of setting, and spent my time before my studies in Croatia, and then came to England to study. So I've sort of been observing two different societies, and what can I say about my past? I have a lovely sister who just recently got married, so that was a family celebration.
Where was the wedding?
It was, well, actually, she got married in America. She's married an American. So. But, very sort of nice upbringing. Very, yeah, positive, interesting for me. Is there any particular aspect you want me to focus on?
Just to learn a bit about you as a person, what's your... what do your parents do?
My mum worked at university, and my dad has done all sorts of things, actually, but he's written textbooks for learning English, and he's basically written a lot, taught a lot. So they're both in the teaching English field.
And how do you feel about being kind of in academia now that you're coming to the end of your PhD? Are you happy with this route, and are you going to continue along now that you've expressed these kind of issues with academia itself?
I mean, I think that sociology is an interesting field in the sense that it has an activist aspect to it, and so what it combines is sort of my a sort of intellectual curiosity with something I feel strongly about, which is inequalities and ways in which we can reduce inequalities. And so what I've noticed is that actually, depending how you position yourself as an academic, but you can actually be someone who uses knowledge and uses research to affect change. And so currently, how it stands, I think it's a good route. If I felt that I wasn't able to be to live the activist side, I think then I'd if I felt bogged down suddenly by, I don't know, marking papers all the time and having to, you know, just focus on my academic side, I think I'd probably, I think that that would lose me the academic route.
Yeah. Do you consider yourself an activist? And if so, how do you explore what it is to be an activist, or how do you activate your activism? Is it in an academic way? Other avenues as well.
I think it's, you know, I mean, it depends how, you know, depends how, sort of who you manage to correspond, you know, who you manage to talk to. But I think it's through, you know, consultancy on different government projects. I think that's a very important route, because that's actually the space where change can happen. So I think there's... I think that's an important part of it. There's also the sort of NGO sector as well, where you can, you know, human rights organizations different educational charities. And so, so both governmental and non-governmental. I think both are really important. But one, I think one can be, depends how you're placed, but one can be a sort of more direct influence, I think.
Are there any particular government policies that you could mention?
Well, there's the Every Child Matters Green Paper. Well, actually moved on from that, but I'm going back years now. So that was, for example, something that involved different departments. And the Every Child Matters comes to mind. And then there's like things on higher education access, which have also been happening. And so... yeah, there are initiatives, and they are, from my impression of them, they involve a sort of, you know, wider, it's a wider consultancy project where, you know, people can get involved from different sectors. So I think that type of, you know, if you can have this sort of bottom-up policy making and you're open to consulting different stakeholders, and that's the way forward. That doesn't always happen, but yeah, it'd be good if it did.
And do you see yourself going down that route professionally as much as kind of writing academically?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think with writing, you're always leaving a sort of trail behind you of a time. And of people living in that time, and so I think that's in a historical perspective, I think that's important to leave. It's sort of a written legacy to future generations, which obviously, if it's a crap piece of work, which it can be very often, you know, but it's still some sort of written. You jot down something that's happening at this point in time. So I think there's sort of that level of it, which I think is important, and you know, sharing ideas, you know, in the academic community, looking at how different people understand the same problem, understand the same world. I think sort of publishing for publishing's sake, I find very problematic. So I think it's writing, but, you know, bearing in mind that, yeah, okay, you can write for an academic audience, but you need to also be able to write in a way that, you know, and argue your case well, why certain things need to change, so.
Do you have a blog?
No.
just wondering, because that's often a site that people use for kind of trying to get their opinion forward in a sort of in a popular medium. So do you see taking part in this project as part of your as a form of activism in a way?
I was thinking about ways in which, you know, how can you verbalize, you know, I was thinking of ways in which you could verbalize inequality and draw attention to it. And then But I think this issue of thinking outside the box, I think it's a sort of generic thing. I think that's it's also about thinking outside the box when we're trying to solve problems. You know, how do we find alternative solutions? How do we find better solutions? I think, you know, that sort of, for me, subsumes the, you know, yeah. So I see it as, I see it as a form of activism, yeah.
And have you told your friends and family that you're doing this, and
yeah.
What have their responses been?
Well, mostly excited, you know, very encouraging. Some people worried what it's going to look like, whether I'm going to be scared as this thing puts me up in the air. And I think people sort of project how they feel. I think in general people think it's a great idea, but it's mostly about how they feel, whether they would take up something like this or not. I think for some people it's too much exposure of some kind, and so people react in different, you know. I think in general people are supportive of it being me, and if I'm happy with that, you know. But they sort of, you can see that they're projecting how, you know, how they would feel about the whole thing on,
yeah.
On how excited or not they are. Yeah, but generally, I think people who I've talked to who have heard about the project have been very positive about it. You know, they think it's a good way to, you know, bring the plinth alive. So.
And how do you feel about the context of the plinth in being in Trafalgar Square and you being on top of it?
Well, I sort of, you know, I said in my little sort of statement how, you know, there's an issue about contributing to a more gender balanced Trafalgar Square, which I think is, so my contribution as a woman on the plinth. But Trafalgar Square is... you know, it's kind of, for me, it's a centre of some kind, you know, and the whole idea of it being in Trafalgar Square, I think, gives it importance. And I think it should be given importance, because I think it's an opportunity to get people involved in an art project, to get people to, you know, voice or perform or, you know, do whatever. And I think it's a great way to use that plinth. Yeah.
How are you feeling personally about standing there tonight? Now it's sort of approaching midnight. What's going through your head now?
Okay. Well. A bit sort of, what, you know, a bit worried about how I'm gonna get up there, and then once I'm there, you know, what I'm going to be thinking about, and whether what I'm saying will come across clearly enough.
I mean saying as in just the
message. Whether anyone will find that, you know, interesting, whether anyone will respond to it. So mixed feelings, I guess, yeah. Excitement, but also anxiousness, and yeah, a lot of question marks, you know.
And what impact do you think it will have, this project, in a kind of wider historical sort of context?
Well, a friend of mine said that she thought this was going to become a part of, you know, art history. How she thought this was going to be something kids are going to learn about, you know. I don't know whether that will happen, but I think that, I mean, I think it's going to have impact on different levels. So I think it has an impact on an individual level. So I think everyone who's going to go up on that plinth has thought about what's important to them, how they can express that in some way, you know, and I think that's one level. Then there's the level of people, friends and family who have been involved in it and who this person has talked to. Then I think people who, you know, gotten in, who have sort of expressed it more in local communities, you know, what they're doing, sort of that's, and I think people were thinking, oh, what would I do if I had an hour on the planet? So it's like a thinking exercise for people. And then I think sort of on a even broader level, it's about, you know, I know that in a Croatian magazine, they had like a little text about the project. So I think it's something that will probably internationally, you know, also attract attention and, you know, show that, you know, I think it's sort of trying to stretch how we conceive what art is, maybe, you know, and also just making it more inclusive, making the art world more inclusive, I think, you know. So I think it works on different levels, and I think that's what makes it beautiful.
Brilliant. And you, as one of the 2,400 individuals that make up this work, what's important to you kind of right now in your life, sort of generally, I suppose, what is it that you think is the most important thing?
Most important thing in my life at the moment. Well, I must say it's my PhD, even though that's just awful, because I'm sure there are many more things that could be really important, but yeah, that's what my days for the last how many months, I've just been so into that. And so I think that's what's preoccupying my thoughts at the moment. And I'm fortunate in the sense that things around me, my immediate, so I'm not thinking on levels beyond sort of things that are currently happening in Iran, and, you know, there's a lot more that I could be thinking about, which would probably be more important. But sort of my immediate surroundings seem to be okay at the moment, so I'm able to just be really selfish and just think about my PhD a lot. But I'm really nearing the end, and so yeah, that's what's dominating currently. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, it's great to have a successful kind of educated woman be standing on the stage, like, you know.
Thank you. That's a nice
really
thing to say.
For history and projects and all of that. Have you got anything else that you'd like to say before we go?
Just that I think it's I think it's a really I think it's a lovely idea, you know, I really do. I think it's I mean, Anthony Gormley has been brought into the center, you know, he has, you know, this I'm sure this is adding to his publicity, but he was famous even before this happened. And in a sense, I kind of see it as a very not a selfish way of, you know, of allowing, you know, because he has amazing works which he could have put there, and people would have been so impressed and would have taken photos of it, you know. And this is a way of sort of giving it to someone else. He was given it, but he gave it, and I think I think that's great. And and, you know, yeah, and I think it's wonderful that people have an opportunity to, people who may not have thought about what they would do for an hour if they had the opportunity to stand on a plinth, that this has been, yeah, a sort of thought exercise for them. Yeah, I think
Thank
that's
you.
Lovely.